Now, turn over and look at Part C. Part C, questions 31 to 42. In this part of the test, you'll hear two different extracts. In each extract, you'll hear health professionals talking about aspects of their work. For questions 31 to 42, choose the answer A, B, or C, which fits best according to what you hear. Now, look at extract 1, questions 31 to 36. You now have 90 seconds to read questions 31 to 36.
Now, answer question 1. The word migraine is derived from the Greek word meaning pain in half the head, as migraine often produces a unilateral or one-sided headache. It is a common and distressing disorder, and although they are not likely to take life, migraines can destroy the quality of life. Studies have shown the incidence of migraine to be in the range of 9 to 10%, and it affects 17% of the female population and 6% of the male population. So, about 2 million Australians can expect to suffer from migraine, and that translates to 1.5 million women and about 500,000 men. It is thought that more women suffer migraine than men due to hormonal factors. There are several types of migraine, the two main types being classical migraine and common migraine. Classical migraines are preceded by an aura, the duration of which varies between 15 minutes up to almost an hour. The headache usually lasts 6 to 8 hours, although they can last up to 72 hours. Common migraines are not preceded by an aura, and the headache lasts between 4 and 72 hours and can be pulsating and unilateral. An upset stomach and vomiting are common symptoms. Migraines can be divided into a number of distinct phases. The first phase includes the early warning symptoms. A significant number of migraine sufferers experience warning symptoms for up to 24 hours before the attacks start, but may not recognize these signs unless they know what to look for. The common symptoms include changes in mood, and these moods can vary from elation, such as feeling on top of the world and full of energy, to opposite moods, such as feeling depressed and irritable. There are several abdominal symptoms common to migraine, including nausea, changes in appetite, such as intense hunger or sugar craving, constipation, and diarrhea. Neurological changes may also occur prior to the migraine, including drowsiness, incessant yawning, symptoms of dysphagia, such as difficulty in finding the right words, a reaction to excessive brightness or sound, and difficulty in eye focus. There may also be changes in behavior, such as hyperactivity, clumsiness, or lethargy. And many sufferers report muscular symptoms, such as general aches and pains. The second phase is the aura. The aura accompanies migraine attacks in about 20 to 30% of migraine sufferers. The most common aura symptoms are visual disturbances such as bright zigzag lines and flashing lights. As well as that, there may be difficulty in focusing or blind spots. The aura commonly affects only one eye, but it can disturb the visual field of both eyes. It usually lasts between 5 and 60 minutes, then the vision normally returns to normal. Less commonly, aura affects sensation or speech. The third phase is the headache. The headache phase can last for up to 3 days. It is often throbbing and on one side of the head, but it can affect both and it is made worse by any kind of movement. The most common accompanying symptoms in this phase are a sensitivity to light, sound, and smell. Eating can help reduce symptoms, especially starchy foods such as breads and pastas. The symptoms can be more distressing than the headache itself. The final recovery stage may last for about 24 hours, and feelings range from complete lethargy to feelings of high energy and even euphoria. Sleep often is beneficial for adults, while effective medication can improve attacks for chronic sufferers. Children seem to feel much better after vomiting, and for a few, nothing works except the headache burning itself out. The dietary triggers include alcohol, especially red wine, certain types of food, notably aged cheese or chocolate, withdrawal from caffeine or caffeinated drinks such as coffee and tea, the food additive monosodium glutamate, dehydration, and inadequate meals. Environmental triggers include bright sunlight, flickering lights, strong smells, for example, perfume, gasoline, chemicals, smoke-filled rooms, and certain food odors. Another environmental trigger is high altitudes or flying. Weather changes can be a trigger factor, as can loud noises or overuse or incorrect use of computers. Other trigger factors include the hormonal triggers. Hormonal fluctuations are implicated as a significant trigger for women, as 3 times as many women suffer from migraine headaches as men. This difference being most apparent during the reproductive years. The hormonal triggers may be menstruation, and a UK study found that 50% of women are more likely to have migraine around menstruation, ovulation, use of oral contraceptives, pregnancy, and it may be worse for the first few months, but in 2/3 of women, it improves in the latter part. The physical and emotional factors which can trigger migraine include a lack of sleep or oversleeping, and even as little as half an hour difference in routine, such as sleeping in on the weekends, can make that difference. Illness, such as a viral infection or a cold, stiff and painful muscles, especially in the scalp, jaw, neck, shoulders, and upper back, sudden or vigorous exercise, emotional triggers such as arguments or excitement, and relaxation after stress. which is known as the weekend headache. There are a variety of treatments available for migraine sufferers, and non-medication treatments such as ice can, in some cases, reduce the impact of a migraine episode. This is because, during a migraine, the blood vessels in the head tend to dilate, which means they open more widely. They may become swollen with blood, and this in turn leads to pressure on the nerves surrounding them. The nerves begin to send pain signals before the onset of migraine. Wrapping the head with an ice pack can bring migraine relief through the cooling of the blood vessels. As the blood vessels cool, they become constricted and return to normal size. This can lessen blood flow to the head and, as a result, reduce pressure on the nerves, thereby providing relief from pain. Another non-medication treatment is biofeedback. The biofeedback technique trains people to improve their health by controlling certain bodily processes that normally happen involuntarily, such as heart rate, blood pressure, and muscle tension. Relaxation techniques may also be helpful at stopping an attack once it has started. The techniques include deep breathing, massage, and stretching. Individuals with occasional mild migraine headaches that do not interfere with daily activities usually medicate themselves with over-the-counter, non-prescription pain relievers such as paracetamol, aspirin, or NSAIDs like ibuprofen. For people who suffer migraines very frequently, prophylactic medication that is taken on a daily basis may be a good option. As a general rule, patients who experience migraines twice or more per month or have migraines which interfere with their quality of life may benefit from this type of medication.
Now, turn over and look at extract 2, questions 37 to 42. You now have 90 seconds to read questions 37 to 42.
I'm here with Dr. Jeffrey McLean, who's an expert in neuromuscular disease. Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you become a neuromuscular disease expert?
Well, I started out with my general neurology training, which I did at Wolfert Hall Medical Center. And from there, I did a fellowship in neuromuscular medicine before returning to where I am now.
And what's your typical day like? What kinds of patients do you see?
I see a fairly broad mix of patients, but when I'm doing specifically neuromuscular medicine, I do a lot of procedures, electromyography, which is a procedure that we use to help diagnose neuromuscular diseases. The type of patients we see range from patients with neuropathies, to patients with muscle diseases that we call myopathies, to patients with disorders of the connection between the nerves and the muscles, neuromuscular junction disorders such as myasthenia gravis, to problems with the motor neurons such as ALS or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
So a variety of very common diseases and some that are more rare and have very serious prognoses.
Exactly. That's right.
And what is the most exciting new development in your field? Which of those conditions have something new to offer patients who are listening?
I think perhaps the most exciting field where we've seen a lot of attention recently has been ALS, especially with the ice bucket challenge recently that garnered so much public attention, so much public excitement. That excitement has transferred into more attention, more funding for more research, things that are looking at improving our understanding of the genetics that play into ALS, where there's a lot of work being done trying to find biomarkers, so things that can be tested easily to more readily diagnose ALS and understand how it progresses in a particular patient. All these things ultimately help us find and research possible treatments that in the end are hopefully will lead us to things that will really benefit patients.
And up until now, there really has not been a great deal to offer an ALS patient. What do you do today?
Right now, what we're focused on is improving the quality of life while people are dealing with this disease. And that's an important thing for both patients and physicians to understand, that while we don't have a cure, there are many things that can be done to significantly improve the quality of life for our patients. So things like help with communication, because many of the patients lose the ability to control their voice and control their speaking. So we can do things to help them communicate as that occurs. Things like assistance with nutrition, because they have difficulty swallowing and eating. So helping them with that. One of the big and often under-recognized problems with ALS are mood problems that go along with it. Obviously, it's a devastating diagnosis. And the social support is very important, that we offer that to our patients to make sure that their quality of life is as high as possible while dealing with this.
And on the other end of the spectrum, we have neuropathies for which we can offer a whole variety of treatments. Is there anything new or exciting for the patient with diabetes or someone else with neuropathy to consider?
Well, again, there's a lot of new research going on. There's a lot of exciting work in terms of trying to find ways to treat the pain, often painful diabetic neuropathies. There are already some drugs currently available that many patients will be familiar with. And as time goes forward, we hope to increase the number of drugs that are available to make them more effective with fewer side effects. So hopefully that will be very soon on the horizon.
That is the end of Part C. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test.